Welcome back to That's Cricket. We got your favorite cricket commentator, Nick Hill, with us today, and I'm excited to learn about his story to the Combox, and we're going to talk all CPL action. Nick Hill, welcome to the show, mate.
Brother, thanks a lot for having me. Great to be on John Boy Media. I think what you guys have done for the game, you know, growing it, expanding it to new audiences has been phenomenal. And I'm seeing those bobbleheads behind you, baseballers. We need to get some cricket virgins. I'm going to start out for you.
Yeah, you're right. We do need some cricket ones. That could be a new thing we bring in this year for CPL and MLC. We get some more cricket bobblehead action. Because, that isn't a thing, but it's a big baseball thing. You get to go to the ballpark, get a bobblehead. Let's bring it in this year. I love that. I'm sure we'll get some more. I'd love to pick your brain on more ideas. But, Nick, I want you to kick us off. Tell me a little bit more about your story, growing up in the West Indies and then getting yourself up into the Combox. Tell us that journey.
Yeah, so I obviously grew up as most West Indian children and boys especially want to do, and that's play cricket for the West Indies. So I was growing up with that dream, playing for club, playing for school. Used to spend a lot of time in the game. And then when I got to around 13 years old, I went to my local cricket club, which is Wanderers Cricket Club, the club of Jason Holder, Craig Brathwaite, to name a few. And there was a guy there by the name of Gary Bell. He had a camera set up and he kept like adding modifications. He would bring a mic the following week. He would bring an extra camera. And I was kind of the most talkative child at the club at the time. So he was like, why don't you give this a try? And I think from there, slowly, I started to do a little more. A few more opportunities. Then I got a radio opportunity to do our local club cricket here in Barbados. And I think when I got to 16, 17, I decided, you know, that I was better at commentary than playing. And it was a great way for me to be involved. So, you know, it took a lot of work and it still takes a lot of work. But luckily, you know, to be involved in things like the CPL has been amazing.
Absolutely. So when you played, would you bat, you bowl, keep? What'd you do? What was your specialty?
People don't believe this because I'm 6 foot five, but I actually started as a wicket keeper.
Okay.
And it was tough, man. I used to sometimes give away 20 buys a game and stuff, but I was slowly improving. When I got the growth spurt, maybe around 17, then I started bowling, but I was bowling off of the wrong foot. So that was also a disaster. I think the mic is better.
Wow. There you go. So make your way into the Combox. You've been involved with CPL. From the start, have you been there pretty much from the start of inception, or when did you first get into the comms?
Well, you could say I've been there from the start because I used to go as a child and scream my lungs out, trying to get signatures. I have like a million bats at home with signatures. But my first break in CPL came in 2019 for the Barbados Tridents. They changed ownership and I begged them to give me like a chance to intern. So when the team came here, I did some social media for them. The next two seasons, I was actually with the team, and that taught me so much about the game, man. I actually traveled as the social media person and PRO. And then in 2022, I did a year of radio commentary for CPL. And since 2023, I've been doing TV and in the Combox itself. And I think it's changed my life.
Yeah. What do you love most about the gig and getting to travel and be on the field? What's your favorite part of it?
Yeah, so I'm definitely a Caribbean man. So I think the fact that you get to travel around to the different islands, the way it works is that we've got two crews of commentators each year and we're split up into two groups. So basically one group will go to a set of territories, the other group will target the others. And I think just getting to experience different Caribbean culture throughout that month. And it's a different type of culture because when the CPL is on in Caribbean countries, it's everywhere. Like you go in the road, people are talking about it. There's signage, there's tons of attention around it, and the games are like packed. So, you know, people look at it from around the world and see it on TV, and it's not as big as the IPLs. But I think what it is to Caribbean people, it's probably the biggest thing of the year. And it's the biggest thing that's a consistent thing every single year. So it's a feeling like no other in the region, man. I think it's just a different energy when August, September, October comes around.
Yeah, tell us a bit more about that and like growing up in that culture, because I come from Australia. I grew up with a cricket culture. Moving to America, it's a baseball culture. It's a football culture. And just tell us what it's like to be in around that. Where like, does everyone talks cricket? They bleed for cricket. Tell us about that.
Yeah, if I had to advise you guys where to go, I think I would probably put Trinidad and Guyana at the top because literally when you go to Guyana for CPL, when CPL goes to Guyana, right? I remember like I would go in a barber shop. The day of the first game last year. And you could not get an appointment everybody is like preparing for the game at night. People like are reselling tickets. Like it's a craze to try and get their hands on a ticket. People camp outside the box office from 3 a.m. when the tickets are released. Like, wow. I think that in itself, I think it shows how much it means to the Caribbean people. But especially in those two countries, I think they've set the benchmark as to how to go about that fandom. It's almost like that American sports culture. And of course, Australian as well. But the way they operate. And I think my favorite thing about working on CPL is being in the crowd. So I get to go in the crowd, interview some people, and then you see the effort that people are putting into costumes, to making different food to bring. And everybody wants to be on TV. So then they try to, you know, really go all out, dress up as umpires, Spider-Man. It's been unreal.
Yeah, the crowd is something that I think the Americans will get into. We had the WBC, the World Baseball Classic, and they saw some of the countries really celebrate hard and really do things a little bit different than they do in the regular MLB season. The CPL, tell us about, you know, everything happened in the crowd. They had the Carnivale kind of the vibe, and everyone's dancing and everyone dresses up. It is really cool.
I know we're going to get to it soon, but the CPL is going back to Jamaica. And what Jamaica has that's unique is horns. So like any game you watch on TV or you watch in person, you're going to constantly hear like horns from the start of the game to the end. And no other country really does it. So I think each country has its own thing. And it's why I always tell people, like, if you wanted to really follow the CPL, fly around to the different islands, because it's not necessarily the same thing you're getting each and everywhere. The cricket might be similar, but every experience off the field is completely unique.
And so in CPL, they are hopping between all the countries that they get to play in each individual country?
Yeah, so they are hopping. I think this year there's a very special, I think this has been announced, but yeah, it has, because the fixture's out. I think for the first time in a long time, I think since the inception, it's going back to St. Vincent. Now, St. Vincent don't have a team, but they're actually going to have the chance to host the first three games of the season. And they also get up, you know, for their cricket. So it's going to be really exciting, but yeah. You go to St. Kitts, you go to Antigua, St. Lucia, Barbados, Trinidad, Guyana, and Jamaica. So you really get, you know, a bang for your buck if you come to the Caribbean.
Yeah, that is really incredible, considering that, you know, here in the States, we're isolated to the three, maybe four grounds. We rotate kind of each year. And then even if you're in Australia, it's like just the same grounds in the same country. But it is cool to have so much variety, all the different countries. Like you said, they're all unique in their own way. The different foods, the different flavors from here and there. I'm excited to get into the teams now, and you kind of dive in a little bit more about the lore and the history of each of the teams. I don't know if there's one that you want to start at, but you mentioned Jamaica as the new team into the league. There was a previous Jamaica. Maybe talk about where they were and how it dropped off and now how they've gotten to the Kingsmen now.
Yeah, sure. So Jamaica obviously are three-time champions in this, but they were formerly known as the Talos. And, you know, they took a break. That franchise became the Antigua and Barbuda Falcons. The ownership stayed the same, but took the team to another territory. But now they've come back under new ownership. And I think Jamaica is, as you know, based on what they've done for culture in the world, athletics, music, they are so well-renowned. So I think it brings a lot back to the CPL. But particularly because of the reasons I mentioned earlier, you know, the amount of people that they have, the atmosphere that they can generate. I think it's really good that they've got a team back, because cricket is sort of suffering in Jamaica compared to some of the other sports. They're huge on football, huge on athletics. So I think the fact that you've got a CPL team there now back again is going to inspire another generation of Jamaicans to play the game. So I think it's really important. But yeah, just really excited for, you know, the people to come out, the horns, but also to see a potential return of Andre Russell or Rodman Powell, some local Jamaicans going back home. That is special in itself.
Yeah, so I've seen over the week, there's been some posts. I don't know I think they're unofficial posts about the draft and who's going where. The draft will be this week at some point towards the end of the week when this video releases. But they get the first pick in the draft here, the Kings, right? They get the first pick, and it looks like they're going to try to pick Russell and get Powell back together. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the draft is a little hard for, you know, viewers at home and fans to follow. But basically, as far as I understand it, the new structure is that Jamaica obviously are going to have their preferences, but each team has three right to match. So it's a big draft this year. Everybody's going back in. But if I'm Trinidad, I can use three right to matches on players that played for me in the previous season. Now, Jamaica are going to have an additional one, but also they're only allowed to sign one player from one Jamaican player, right to match one Jamaican player from each team. So, for example, Brandon King and Rodman Powell are both Jamaicans and both played for the Barbados Royals. It would be kind of unfair if they were to get both of them. So I think they might probably stick with Rodman or Brandon King, either or, and then look to try and get an Andre Russell from TKR. You look to get maybe a Fabian Allen from the Falcons and try to build their team like that. So that's how it's going to work. It's going to be very interesting because you look at teams, the stronger teams like Trinidad or Guyana, they've had four or five core guys for the last maybe almost decade. So now all of a sudden it's like a mini rebuild where you're losing out on, you know, those guys, and it's going to be really, it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. And I'm excited to see how it all shapes out and where everyone goes. You said that it's going to be a more open draft this year. So is everyone go in the pool and then you get to retain three?
Yeah. Everyone goes in the pool and then you get to right to match three. So, I mean, let's say the Kingsmen pick Nicholas Pooran. Obviously, TKR, I mean, I can almost guarantee they'll be right to match in Pooran.
Yeah.
Pollard, they'll right to match Pollard. If they pick Narine, they'll right to match Narine. But then it gets interesting because you've finished your right to matches and you've got guys like Aki Hossein, for example, or maybe for Guyana, Shea Hope, who will be available. So, yeah, it's gonna be fascinating, man.
Very good. So we're coming off last year's winners, TKR. They get the win, and they have the most decorated CPL team with the most wins, the most championships.
Yeah, so they've got five titles, TKR, and I mean they've been dominant from the inception. Really, Bravo was captain when I was young. Pollard was captaining Barbados. You know, he used to win. They won back to back titles, something that's extremely hard to do in 17 and 18, and then I think they've always maintained a really strong core of Trinidadians as well. So they bought into that local pride in terms of getting people to stadiums and, you know, coming to support the locals. But they've just got such a strong, especially white ball cricket. They've always Trinidad and Tobago from the Champions League days when they, you know, I think they went to the final back in 2013. They've always had a very strong white ball structure. So because of that, when guys like Kyron Pollard came back and Nicholas Pooran matured and got older and switched from the Barbados Tridents to Trinidad, you know, they were always going to be a big force to be reckoned with. And of course, when you add someone like Andre Russell, although he's been injured in the past, he still makes a difference and can win you maybe 2 to 3 games a season. So that's why they've been so strong and so hard to beat.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how it shakes out now with the new draft and how much they keep and if they can keep going with their success. The Guyana Amazon Warriors, they went down in the final. How do you think they're going to shape out? And tell us a little bit about Guyana and kind of the flavor of the team.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know the saying, Adam, I think they use it a lot in American sports where the law averages suggest that, you know, at some stage things will fall for you. But I think they've defined the law they've disproved the law because they've been to the finals 7 times now. And they've won once. Like, the amount of heartbreak for the Guyanese people, and a lot of those finals have been in Guyana as well. So imagine Trinidad, who is their arch nemesis, going into Guyana and taking the trophy from them. It's been quite the heartbreak for the Guyanese fans. But I think, you know, they've always, again, like Trinidad, always had a very strong group of Guyanese players. And I do think, you know, they're continuing to get better. The Romario Shepherds, the Sherman Hetmeyers, the Shamar Josephs. But they're going to lose a few. So, you know, you no longer have 5 to 6 really good players that you've had together for the last 5 years. That in itself is going to be a challenge. But you never know. For a team that keeps getting to the final and coming up short, maybe a fresh start is sort of what they need.
Yeah, maybe. That's a pretty bad rub of the green there. It almost gives kind of like South Africa vibes a little bit, considering how many times they get to finals and unable to go all the way. The Falcons, Antigua and Bermuda Falcons. You said they transferred over. They were the Talawars, and then they rebranded. How are they looking?
Yeah, so it's been, I think, only this will be now their third season in the CPL. Been up and down. I think last year, some things to be quite pleased with. They got Jaden Seals in the draft. He had a great season. They paired him with Obed McCoy. The two of them look like they are quite an exciting partnership. They've got a local young talent in Joel Andrew, who is one that probably we'll be talking about for a long time in West Indies cricket. So if they can build around those guys, all under 30 years old, I think they've got a really strong core going forward. But it's tough, as I think always tough for a team to come in to the CPL. And I think this year probably will benefit them a lot, where the draft is quite open and they can choose from a number of different players, maybe take some players from other teams to strengthen that base, and maybe try to get one or two of the Antiguans back home. Azari Joseph played for St. Lucia for a number of years. He's Antiguan. So maybe you get him back, make him captain, and things change. But they've been to the playoffs once, and I think the fact that they've been knocking on the door with regularity, they'll feel quite confident that, you know, if they can have a really good draft, it could be the year.
Nice. Now, do Antigua and Bermuda, do they have a signature thing like the horn, or do they have something special that they do over there?
Antigua, they're known for a few things. I would say mainly their food. I don't know too much about Antigua, to be honest, but they have similar elements. So carnival is quite big in Antigua. They would have like the same carnival simulation when people come to watch the games. But I'm challenging the Antiguans this year because it's out of the venues that we've had. I think they're the quietest. So I want to see the Antiguans bring a little more flavor and also come out in their numbers, because we haven't filled the Sir Vivian Richards Stadium. But I think this year, if the team starts to win, you have a few Antiguans playing for the team, Rakeem Cornwall as well. I think then, you know, maybe some more people will come out. So I'm challenging you, Antiguans, to come out.
So the rack attack is from Antigua? Yes, that's where he's from.
Okay. Liberta, Antigua.
There you go. So he plays for the Royals. Looks good in pink right now. Most of the highlights I put up of him is wearing in the pink. He's still in the pink right now, right?
No, so he left for the last 2 years. When the Falcons changed to the Falcons, he went over to Antigua, went back home. So he had his best years at the Barbados Royals in the pink. But then he's made the change to go back home. I actually think there's a chance he could be captain. Like, I was quite surprised last year when they made Imad Wazin captain instead of him, who was like a foreign captain. Because Cornwall knows the players so well, and he really is loved by the world, but also the Antiguan people.
Oh, yeah, the rack attack. Jimmy's a huge fan. Jumbo Jimmy's a huge fan of Cornwall. All the posts that he makes about him, they get the most views on anything he talks cricket. It's rack attack. He actually got to face him in the Nets when they were down there last year. And he also got to face Jaden Seals, which I was scary. Our first thing I said, he told me, I was like, hope it wasn't a real ball, because that's just way too scary. Yeah. So the Royals, the Barbados Royals, who do they have, and how's it look over there in Barbados?
Yeah, the Royals, I think, probably a team in transition, because, you know, they won this tournament under Jason Holder's leadership back in 2019. They've been to a final in 2022, but they haven't found that sort of trophy lifting season. And I actually thought last year was a great chance. I mean, if you assemble Rodman Powell, Brandon King, and Sherfane Rutherford on the same team, you'd expect that, you know, that team would be challenging. And they have had the likes of DeCock and David Miller in the past in terms of their overseas players. Their recruitment strategy was quite interesting because they went for a lot of young players. And I think maybe they suffered in the season last year when guys got injured. They didn't have that depth. But for me, Rodman Powell is probably the best leader in terms of personality and tactically in the Caribbean. And you may lose him if we're judging the rules right and we think the Kingsmen. I've seen some hype about it in the media. I don't think it's confirmed yet, but I do think there's a very strong chance that Rodman Powell returns home at a team he's won a championship for. So I think, how do they react without Powell's leadership? Do they make maybe a Rutherford captain? He's not a huge leader. Or can they maybe get a Shea Hope, who's West Indies captain, to come and lead? Those things will be quite interesting, but I do think they're definitely a team that needs a reset and maybe some more experience, because they've always gone for younger players since it's become the Royals.
Yeah.
Sorry, Adam. Very importantly, the final and the playoffs are in Barbados for the first time in a long time. So they will want to be in the final for their people and to get that support. So yeah, it's critical this year.
Yeah, no, that would be great getting the crowd there. It's good, always good to have you know, they're having it sync sequence so that the finals sync up with the team that is playing. St. Kitts, Nevis, the Patriots, how are they shaking out?
Yeah, the Patriots, they've had a few tough seasons. So they won the tournament in 2021, Dwayne Bravo was captain. And then after that, they struggled. I think they won one game at home in 10. That's how much they struggled in the two seasons afterwards. But they really went hard to get Jason Holder from the Barbados Royals to come over to the Patriots. And it was an up and down season last year, but it was their first season with a very new group. And I think there's a lot to be quite pleased with. They made drastic improvements from the previous 2 years. And I look at that team and what they've assembled. They've got a few young talents in like Navin Badesi, for example. Holder's leadership, he's already won the CPL a couple of times and once as captain. So I think there's something there. The way that they play the cricket, and Adam St. Kitts is one of my personal favorites. It's very small, but the way that people come out and support, they sit on the grass mound. It's an excellent atmosphere when it's rocking, when they're winning. So based on last season, they missed out in the end, but I think there would have been a lot to build on from 2025 coming into this year.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, and Holder's fantastic. He went on a tear in the CPL. In the IPL. He didn't say the first couple of games. And then he's got a couple of full wicket hauls, classic catches. And obviously he does a great job here over in the MLC too. And it's great to have all of the West Indian players, you know, really dominating or being really significant in the IPL and all around the world. You know, they make an impact. Kind of ever. We're getting that in a little bit more. We got one more team. The St. Lucia Kings. Where are they sitting this year?
Yeah, so the Kings were champions 2 years ago. I think last year probably didn't go to plan. But, I mean, a couple of exciting names. I want to see if they can get Tim Seifert back because it was pretty much from the CPL when he scored 100. Where was that 100? I think it was in St. Lucia itself. Yeah, on a Sunday morning. He scored 100 in St. Lucia. And I think that CPL already kickstarted this new evolution of Tim Seifert, the player. So what he's gone on to do for New Zealand in the World Cup and in the IPL in glimpses, I think it's been off the back of CPL. So if they can keep him, Johnson Charles is the leading run scorer in the CPL. So the two of them have formed quite a formidable opening partnership. And then they too have got Akeem Ogis. They've got Roston Chase, or should I say they've had, because you don't know now how things are going to fall. Can they hold on to Alzarri Joseph, who's been central to their bowling exploits, you know, in the past? And I think the biggest thing about St. Lucia is that Darren Sammy, who is almost a national hero in the country, is their head coach. So everywhere they go, it feels like St. Lucia is well represented. And Johnson Charles also has a stand named after him at the Darren Sammy Cricket Stadium, so in St. Lucia. So the two of them are pretty much the linchpin to any St. Lucian franchise. So I fully expect them to retain Charles. Retain Akeem Ogis, who's a young talent, also St. Lucian. But the way the rest of the draft, you know, peters out is going to be fascinating because, you know, someone like a Roston Chase could be high priority for other teams because of his all-round ability.
Yeah, I mean, St. Lucia's been floating around the internet the last week or so with iShow Speed going down there and getting a little batting practice and a little bowling in there. With Sammy, do you see any of his bowling or his batting? Do you see it?
Yeah, so I saw. You mean Speed?
Yeah, Speed. Yeah.
A nice throw, man. To be honest, I think Sammy was kind of unfair to him because he was standing like 10 meters away, firing.
It was so close.
And he was gonna miss it. But I think his batting needs some work. But Speed is so athletic, man. It's unreal to see how athletic he was. I think definitely if he had, you know, some more mechanics and had a few more lessons, he could easily become a fast bowler. The way he's built, the way he runs, because the best fast bowlers are almost like sprinters. So, yeah, Speed was impressive, man. And it was good to see him play in so many different venues. He played in Trinidad, St. Lucia, and Antigua.
Yeah, it was great following it. And, I mean, everywhere he went, they did a great job. The schools kind of shut down for half a day and the kids got out there to see him and it was great. And then to see him doing cricket stuff, that just puts so many more eyeballs, you know, American eyeballs and global eyeballs on the sport, which I think is just fantastic. We can talk a little bit more about the cricketers and how they're impacting around the world. We got a lot of them playing in the IPL right now. Some of them are really hot in form. Some of them not so hot in form. I'm going to start with my poor Nicky P. He's won, came out of winning at the MLC And then goes over with the Super Giants and just hasn't been able to find the middle of the bat. But then he comes out and scores 60 off not many. How do you see what's happened to him this year with LSG and how they've kind of gone?
Yeah, from the beginning of the season, Adam, I thought he should have batted at three. I mean, last year, the guy had his best ever season at three. He won you 4 or 5 games single-handedly. I think anytime you have a guy, I understand that they've got so many other guys and you're trying to fit around. They've lost David Miller. So they thought, let's put Puran at five and he's flexible enough to bat anywhere. But you're taking away balls from your best player. And I think the minute he went back to three was that game you mentioned where he got the 60-odd. It's no coincidence that all of a sudden he was coming in with less pressure. He was coming in with more time, more power play overs to sort of get set and go big. So I think they missed the trick, you know, personally in the season to not have him at three earlier. But he's a quality player, man. And I think every player goes through, you know, the dips. But if he can, I actually think this is a statement to the teams in the MLC, for example. I'm sure he's going to bat at three, probably captain. Am I New York? I'm sure for CPL, obviously TKR, he'll captain by that three. I think that's his best position.
Yeah, no, I think the struggle LSG have is like they have so many top order guys, so many guys that could bat there. And it seemed like if you got it wrong, which they did get it wrong. And the way that the order of the table now sits, the teams with the most opening pairings options at the bottom of the ladder. So, like, LSG has gone with 5 different options. MI has gone with 5 different options. They're at the bottom of the table. Like, the teams that have set in stone who their openers are going to be, even KKR, they've gone with 4 or 5 different versions of the opening pairs. RCB had the injury kind of null and voids, the extra pairing there. But the guys that have stuck with it, even I was a little bit skeptical on Samson and CSK, but they stuck with him, and they're moving up the ladder now. And so, yeah, it's all kind of shaken up. I don't know how it's going to end up. It's going to be crazy, this end to this season of the IPL. It's going
to
be...
It's very hard to predict, man, because you have teams like Rajasthan, you have teams like Punjab who started so hot. I mean, even RCB. I mean, for Punjab Kings to lose 4 in a row, I would have never thought that. But again, it's down to the way that they play, the way they bat. It's just all aggression. They want to go hard regardless. And also, it doesn't help that they're dropping 3 catches every game. Right. Takes league like this, you give batters at this quality a chance, they're going to make you pay. So, yeah, the flip has been insane. I looked at Gujarat maybe a few weeks ago and thought, too dependent on the top 3. Don't think they'll make it. They're in the top 2. SRH, I looked at their bowling attack before the season and I was like, that's not a good enough bowling attack. And then they pulled out guys who never played the IPL and who are dominating. So, it's crazy, man. It's hard to predict and it's probably why, you know, it's the best league in the world in terms of the cricket quality.
Yeah, and I've been loving your videos, by the way, online, breaking down some of these plays from the IPL. There's been a lot of really good strategy implemented in this IPL. We're seeing a lot of new deliveries being bowled. You're putting a lot of videos out on some of these new deliveries. The game has really changed from when I played cricket growing up. It was basically all out swing, you know, or playing red ball cricket. There wasn't really variety in the balls. Now we're seeing in the RPL, they've got the knuckle balls coming out, the different versions of the slower balls coming out, and they're doing a lot of high IQ plays. Talk through some of the balls you've been putting out and describing and you're seeing now with these, you know, really high IQ plays.
Yeah, I think, it's, as you said, that's where the direction the game is going in. Because cricket has become such a batting heavy game, I think bowlers have had no choice but to try and find ways to evolve. So just an example, Josh Hazlewood, for example, like he's come, instead of just releasing his off cutter like as he normally would, he's now like holding it as a seam up delivery and only changing the grip at the top. Small things like that to try to throw off batters. You're looking for any small advantage to give you as a bowler because of how flat the pitches are, how good the bats are, how small the stadia are. So I think as a bowler, you've got to find ways. Stoinis yesterday, he had a ball that he released, you know, seam up. But really and truly, it looked like a normal delivery, but it was a slower ball because it came out the back of the hand, like the back of the palm. So it just floated out the hand. So yeah, I think bowlers are finding ways. And before it used to be, you know, just bowl your slower ball, bowl your back of the hand. But batters are so good now, they can almost pick that from the hand. So now as a bowler, you've got to think, how can I disguise the disguise? How can I disguise my slower ball and my change of pace? It's crazy. Crazy to see the direction the game is going in. But I think this will separate the best bowlers from the rest. If you can survive in today's day and age, it really shows that you're quality.
Yeah, and it at the slower balls and the disguise and the newer bowlers kind of brings me thinking of MLC final. Rashilda Gurkha, that final over to Maxwell Real and Phillips was really just like masterclass on like, you know, how to get it done against the best. A young guy, you know, pressure situation needed, and he just bowled multiple slower balls that just really hit the spot.
Yeah, I think he was very aware of what was working on that surface on that day, which was into the pitch. And also, as I always say, it's like one thing to know the slower ball, but you've got to execute it. Like, had he missed at all, you know, Maxwell and Phillips, the quality, they would have hit him out the ground. So not only the thought of bowling the slower ball or being able to do it in practice, but to actually execute it in the last over of a final at 20 years old, I think it's phenomenal. I saw him take a picture with MS Dhoni a couple of days ago.
Yeah,
that's the biggest benefit about MLC. These teams now will invest in these guys. So Rushil Ugarkar is not going to just play MLC every year. He's going to go to India in the offseason, develop maybe two or three more variations, develop more control of length, and come back as maybe five times a better bowler. That's the beauty of the league.
Yeah, I mean, he's picked in the USA team. They're going to be playing ODIs this week against Nepal and Scotland. Great to see him included in that, and I'm excited to see him again in the MLC. And MLC is just right around the corner for us. That's going to be coming up just before CPL. We're going to be in Oakland and the new LA location and Texas. Give you a quick breakdown on how you see MLC kind of shifting this year and how you've seen and grown up with America growing into cricket.
Oh, man, the MLC has been game-changing, man. Everywhere I've gone, I went to India for the World Cup. The amount of people that are talking about it, you know, calling it the mini IPL with the Indian franchises, it's really changed the landscape of American cricket. And I'm sure in the next few years, it's only a matter of time before the USA really start to compete because of the amount of players they're churning out. But nah, this year is going to be fun, man. The international players look really good. I think there have been clashes in the past with the 100 and stuff, which have meant that players, the best of the best, haven't been able to come out. But I think all of the teams have got a really strong showing of the overseas players. But the difference and how you really judge a league is by its locals. And I think the locals continue to grow exponentially each and every year. So I think this year could be the best of the best.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for it. I mean, coming off the back of the World Cup, we didn't get to where we wanted to be, but there was some really good highlights. I'm thinking Shadley's Van Kousvaik with, you know, taking the most wickets out of the group stage, having India rocked, which was just fun to watch. And then just the rub of the green didn't kind of go our way with Ali Khan getting hurt and everything. But no, I'm really excited for the upcoming talent here in the USA and to really put it on the map. And like I said, it is kind of like a mini IPL. We get to see a lot more of the international players playing here in MLC other than playing in India. Obviously, India gets the best of their players, and they are all, could even the second 11 India could beat really anyone else. But we get to have everyone here. A lot of the Australian players get to come out here. The South Africans, the West Indies players are here. Most of the guys that are playing IPL and a lot of the CPL guys are in our MLC teams, which is exciting.
Yeah, definitely. I think for West Indies cricket as well, you know, you're giving opportunities to a lot of guys from the Caribbean to actually play and rub shoulders with some of the best, young and old. So, yeah, it's a huge league and, you know, really looking forward to what this season is going to be. Just based on what's happened in the past, I think the LA prospect with the Olympics around the corner is huge, and I really hope the people come out there and get behind it the way that the sport has taken off in Dallas and other parts of the States.
Yeah, no, and we'll kind of finish on this. The Olympics, we're going to end up, we're heading towards that in 28. What's your vision for the cricket over here in the States and the Caribbean and how it's going to look by the time we get to 28?
Yeah, there are a lot of Caribbean countries that are fighting over it because I think they've told that the West Indies that they can't compete as a joint venture. So I actually want to see if there's going to be a tournament to decide which Caribbean island represents, you know, the Caribbean, because there's no West Indies, and I think hopefully the West Indies will have some presence there. So it'll be fun, and I think everybody wants to be at the Olympics. It's something you look back on in 20 years and you tell your children, you know, I played at the Olympics and this year I represented my country. So it's going to be fascinating to see. Obviously, India's and the Australia's and everyone is going to want a piece as well. How many teams? What's the format? Is it T10? Is it T20? It's going to be really good to see.
Yeah, no, I mean, hopefully we can figure out which West Indian team or some team can get put together, because They are one big piece of the cricket puzzle, and you would have to have them there. Nikhil, thank you for your time today. Thanks for being on the show. I want you to close it out. We're going to give me a That's Cricket.
Brother, thanks for having me. That's Cricket.